Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 123. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in once again for my co-host David Todd, as he has been most of the offseason, is Alex Kozura on this 4th of July Monday. Bang! Happy 4th of July, Alex.
Happy 4th of July, Dave. Happy 4th of July, Steelers Nation. And Dave, we were talking right before we started the podcast that we're celebrating 4th of July by waiting where Kevin Durant will sign his $150 million some odd contract, the American way.
Yeah, that was in the Constitution somewhere, or in the Declaration of Independence, right?
I do believe the pursuit of happiness and a $150 million guarantee, I think. Exactly.
Boy, the money these guys are making. Some of these guys, now look, I obviously don't follow NBA basketball very, very close, and there are a lot of guys I couldn't pick out, you know, if he gave me 10 opportunities out of any kind of a photo headshot lineup, but boy, some of these names I know I don't know are getting incredible amounts of money, and it's kind of funny to see NFL players, you know, fire out with their disbelief on Twitter, so to speak, as far as the guaranteed money goes, and then you have former players such as Kevin Mawai trying to calm the troops and take the stance that, well, they don't have as many players on each team, so they can make more. But the fact of the matter is that the guaranteed portions of these contracts are what really sets the NBA apart from the NFL.
And actually, the news is just in. Kevin Durant has published on the Players Tribune he is going to Golden State. So he'll go to the Warriors with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. I know we don't want to make this a basketball podcast, but that's going to be the biggest news of the day.
Well, at least he did it early, right? So everybody can now focus their attention on the hot dog eating contest.
Except for Thunder fans who will be crying for the rest of the day.
Golden State it is,
yep,
huh?
Yep, yes, sir. Wojo reported it first, and it went up on the Tribune, so it's official.
Oh, wow. Interesting for sure. Speaking about money.
you had some fun yesterday.
And, you know, I don't know how I get myself. Well, I do, but
you too, yeah.
You know, this kind of stuff just seems to kind of follow me. You know, Le'Veon Bell has been busy this all season working on his rap career, and I have absolutely no issue with that whatsoever. Whatever's going to keep him kind of occupied during his, you know, I mean, he's obviously doing his knee rehab. But at the same time, look, you know, if you got a hobby such as this, and you think you're good at it, you can make a little bit of extra money or get yourself a little extra attention, you'll have at it. But Bell released another song of his off of his, I guess, forthcoming album, if you will, entitled Focus. And in that song, Alex, you know, I'm not one to follow and try to read too much into lyrical lines at times, especially when it comes to players, but here is his line from his latest song, Focus. Mm-hmm. I'm at the top, and if not, I'm the closest. I'm the need 15 a year, and they know this. What do you read into that?
I don't know. Not a ton. I don't think I'm going to get my financial contract nuance from Le'Veon Bell's rap lyrics. I think it was probably just easier to say $15 million than, well, 10.5 based on market value and this and that. Like, you know, I'm sure he would love that. Who wouldn't? But I think, as you pointed out in your post, kind of responding to that line, $15 million seems to be pretty unlikely.
Now the post that I did wasn't directly hoping Le'Veon Bell would see this. It was just a point of, if he is looking for $15 million, perhaps his focus should be somewhere else. And yeah, I think I spelled it out pretty good. Look, this isn't new conversation. We've talked quite a bit about Le'Veon Bell and the with him potentially seeing a contract extension prior to the start of the 2016 season. And look, personally, I hope he gets it. I think Le'Veon Bell is arguably top 2-3 running backs in the league. Now, granted, he has had the injury issues. He's yet to play in a playoff game. We know all of that. Obviously, coming off of a severe injury with what he suffered last year in the game against the Cincinnati Bengals. But you know, there's no reason for us to think that he's not going to return to being the player that he was prior to that injury, much in the same way that Adrian Peterson came back from his couple of torn ligaments a few years ago. The fact of the matter is, though, $15 million, if that indeed is what Le'Veon Bell is hinting at, and I can't see where I really don't see where he kind of took issue with what I wrote.
Well, yeah, explain what Bell said. He saw your post. What did he say to you?
Yeah, he responded back to my post saying, "It's clear to see that you're clueless as to what's going on." Okay. That's a pretty Captain Obvious statement, depending on what you're talking about. And I'm assuming that he didn't like the fact that I think that he's focusing on $15 million a year. I have no issue with Le'Veon Bell, and he obviously, I think, knows that. He has yet to block me on Twitter. At least I don't think he has up until right now. But I mean, look, you throw something out there for us to discuss. You want me to promote what you did, which I did earlier in the day, letting everybody know that his latest track has dropped. You can't fault me for trying to read in between the lines and writing a very objective post of whether or not I think he will get $15 million a year in new money. And then he pops back. It's clear to see that I'm clueless as to what's going on. Maybe I am. Maybe him and his agent already have something kind of outlined here where Le'Veon Bell will get an additional $60 million over the course of the, four additional years. I don't know, Alex. Do you see something like that happening when we're talking about – now, look, let's be clear here. When we're talking about $15 million a year, in order for him to become to better Adrian Peterson's $14 million a season, the way this is all tabulated here, the way these athletes measure things and agents measure things, is the average of new money – over the course of the amount of new years.
Mm-hmm.
And that, look, break it down however you want. It would have to roughly be $60 million over four new years. Is there any way the Rooneys, give Le'Veon Bell such money?
I don't think so, Dave. Like we said before, I think he comes in as comfortably the second highest paid back in the league behind AP. Kind of, basically around that 10.5-11 million figure that you said. I don't think that Bell. I think Bell's smart enough to realize that even though he probably wants $15 million and he believes he's the best back in the league and should be paid as such, it's not going to happen. At least not in Pittsburgh. And I think that line in his song was a little tongue in cheek, and I don't think it was actually literally meant as in I am expecting and I'm going to ask for and I will take nothing less than $15 million per year.
Especially as I wrote, and going back to what my buddy Joel Corey, former NFL agent, told me recently of where he expects the franchise tag for the running back position to be next offseason, probably right around $12.5 million. When you consider that they have Bell locked up for just under $1 million in 2016, and you figure kind of at worst, if you don't get a deal done with him this offseason, that the most that you'll have to pay him next year would be $12.5 million. Now, obviously, you could slap that franchise tag on him and him hold out, yada, yada. But when it comes to running backs, Alex, they are not wise to hold out seasons,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, in other words, they you know, if they get a fair market value deal on the table with, you know, 30 to 40% guaranteed money, they ought to jump all on it, because lifespan, you know, not lifespan, but playing span of the position, you know, look, there's no reason to think that Bell's going to play 10 years in this league, right? Mm-hmm. Especially with his early injury history, right?
Right. When you're a running back, as soon as you get into the league, that meter starts running, and you better catch it before it runs out. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to franchise him. I think if they both teams want to come to a long-term deal, no one wants to do the franchise. And like you said, it sets an average yearly value that you have to deal with from a negotiating standpoint forever. I have some reservations if a deal will get done before the start of the season, because we know Bell wants to wait until he's fully healthy to really negotiate a contract, and I understand that deadlines spur action, but I think there's still going to be a smaller window. It's going to make it a little bit tougher to get a deal done, but I do think it happens eventually. I think he will become the second highest paid back in the league.
I do as well too, and what good does it do him, barring the Steelers just trying to shaft him money wise? What good does it do him waiting past this year?
I guess I think he wants to get healthy and then negotiate, and there's no guarantee, you know, the health and the time to negotiate is going to work out perfectly. Yeah, you have every incentive to get a deal done now. I mean, you know, that's true really for most players, because you never know a bad season, an injury again. You know, we know Bell's history. You hope you can get a deal done now. I'd love to do that, put that to bed. We'll see if it happens.
You know, when here's the way you got to look at this. Let's say the franchise tag is, let's go ahead and raise it to $13 million on the high side next year. Okay, and he's scheduled to make just short of $1 million this year. So his max earnings the next two seasons, if nothing changes and he ends up getting a tag, is going to be $14 million, right?
Right.
And that's only if he makes it through the 2016 season, which we assume he will, all injuries aside. Mm-hmm. So at that point, to me, I'm looking to get at least – thirteen to $15 million guaranteed this year. Okay, as part of a deal, I want that money sooner rather than later, especially being as I play the running back position,
mm-hmm.
and then have the ability to be locked in, you know, in into the future average yearly value. So that's why I'm still kind of optimistic that this thing gets done. On top of that, I think it's better to get him and DeCastro done now,
yeah,
this offseason, if at all possible, and then worry about guys like AB and others down the line there. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, I merely wrote this more on an economics, you know, kind of aspect of things, and I would like to spit, Alex. I have my own debut. I'd like to spit some lines.
Oh my goodness! Okay, all right.
I would ask for a beat here, but I don't think DJ Kazora can come up one. Juice wants $15 million. Oh, can't you tell? Wants to make more than AP does Le'Veon Bell. Getting $60 million in new money will be a tough sell. When Art Rooney does that, it'll be a cold day in hell.
That was pretty good. Were you,
word to your mother.
Were you in 8 Mile? I think I saw you in 8 Mile. I'm pretty sure I actually did see you.
No, I was in 14th Mile.
That was good. I give you credit. A little golf clap.
Yeah, yeah. Let me try that one more last time. Juice wants $15 million. Oh, can't you tell? Wants to make more than AP does Le'Veon Bell. Getting $60 million in new money will be a tough sell. When Art Rooney does that, it'll be a cold day in hell. Does that sound more gangster?
I don't. You saying the word gangster does not sound gangster, so I think it's hard to get the. But no, I would quit, because I think you're going to get on top. But that's pretty good.
That's blogger gangster, as we like to say.
Yeah, fair enough. Very, very.
What's our, what will be our new album? That will be part of our new album dropping. What did you joke on Twitter that it would be?
Well, bloggers making dollars. Yeah, that's the album.
Bloggers making McDollars.
McDollars, I like that.
All right, we've had enough fun with that on the 4th of July. Hopefully, I don't become, like I said on Twitter, I don't want to become subject matter of Le'Veon Bell's newest rap song. So my mother would not approve of that.
And just for the record, this was totally unscripted. I had no idea that Dave was doing this, but I very much enjoyed it.
No, you didn't.
No. I was trying to be nice on the 4th of July. But...
No, you didn't. Okay, you released the, talking about contracts here, trying to find stuff to write about this time of the offseason right now has been tough. I've decided to do a couple of contract lookbacks, as far as, higher profile Pittsburgh Steelers players that have gotten lucrative kind of extensions here. I went back and had all the data here and formulated it for the readers on Steelers Depot. The big deal that Hines Ward signed back in September of 2005, and if people remember, that was Ward was entering the final year of his contract. He wanted a new lucrative long-term deal. He held out the first 15 days of training camp. The Steelers, finally told his agent, Eugene Parker, look, we're not going to negotiate with you unless you get into camp. You have our word that we'll, the two of us, two sides will work out a new deal. Ward eventually reported to training camp. They resumed contract negotiations, and that ultimately culminated in a contract with a base value of $27.5 million and a max available value of $30 million. And at that time, man, I wish I didn't look this up, but I want to say it put Ward in the top. Do you remember, Alex? Was it top 7 or 8?
Oh, I couldn't tell you.
Wide receivers in the league, somewhere around in there. That new contract gave Ward the ability to earn $18 million during the first 3 years of the deal. And if we're going to look at this at kind of base, measure this the way we kind of measure contracts now, if you look at the $30 million max available value, and in essence, being as how he was set to earn, I think, a little over $1.6 million in 2005. If you subtract that $1.668 million from $30 million, that's how much of the new money was involved, which comes out to about $28.3 million. If you divide that by 4 years, it's a little over $7.5 million, right around in there. Or so was his average yearly value at the time. So when you look at a guy like Antonio Brown, who right now makes his average yearly value is just over $8 million right now, you can really see that back then wasn't really a bad deal for Hines Ward. But here's the thing where the Steelers were able to kind of protect themselves in this new deal. And I know I'm boring the hell out of a lot of people here listening to this contract. I mean, listen to all this old contract talk. Is the thing that the Steelers put a $4 million option bonus in year two of that contract, along with a $1 million roster bonus. So had something happen to Hines Ward during that 2005 season, although you would hate to have seen it happen, the Steelers really, could have cut the cord on that with really only $4 million in dead money moving forward. And one would assume that would have been, they would have had to make the decision by early March of 2006. And in doing so, they probably would have had to designate Ward as a post June 1st cap casualty at that time, but in the long run they would have been able to at least help themselves salary cap wise. Fortunately, that didn't happen. Ward, of course, played out that contract and got a new contract prior to the start of the 2009 season. So I think it's kind of fun to kind of go back and look at that. I know a few people have asked what were the not likely to be earned incentives Ward could have earned in that deal. I can't for the life of me remember what those were. I can't even think if I ever knew what those were, and I would really probably I don't even think those were disclosed, and I think I'd have to get a hold of an agent to find out whether or not what those were. So kind of interesting to look back. I think I might look back at Deuce Staley's contract in my next write-up. Perhaps that'll be up on July 4th later on today. The thing is, I was kind of when and I'm kind of getting to this, I think, and spurred this on is, you know, when it was the last time that a Steelers player was the highest paid at his position?
Is that a statement or a question? Do you know the answer
yeah,
to that?
The question, it's yes. I haven't researched, and I can't remember back to you know, look, we know Ben Roethlisberger wasn't it, right?
Mm-hmm.
At any point of his career. Now, he's had some nice contracts, mm-hmm. but you know, we've never come away with him, I don't think, being the highest paid.
Was he still behind on his last deal? Who was?
Aaron Rodgers, right?
Rodgers, okay. I couldn't remember that. I couldn't remember when the Flacco deal happened. I'm trying to put it all together.
You know, so he was right there, I think, with Aaron Rodgers. But if memory serves me, he was behind when you looked at the new money average yearly value, yada yada. You know, if anybody has an opportunity to be the highest paid person at their position, it would. I'm trying to remember what. I don't even think Pouncey was he? He wasn't the highest paid center, was he?
I couldn't tell you for sure. You'd have to look it up. Good topic to look up. But I do not know. What I do know though is that Antonio Brown will be the highest paid receiver when he signs a contract, whenever that is.
Yeah, the only way you know that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
If it is with the Steelers is if for some reason maybe Odell Beckham Jr. Gets a deal and then AB for some reason comes in slightly behind that, but I just can't see that happening. And barring them not getting a deal done with AB, as we talked about several times, we would expect him to actually be the highest paid at his position.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which would be a rarity for the Steelers, right? I think so. That's something that I look forward to kind of researching. As far, I mean, we know David DeCastro is not going to be the highest paid guard, right?
Oh, Semele is still going to be have more than DeCastro, yep.
Right. So, I mean, if you go back in time, I'm trying to remember. Maybe a listener can correct me if I'm wrong. If there's ever been a Steelers player,
did Troy ever get a big contract at safety that outpaced anybody? I know I'm putting you on the spot.
I can't remember if he was the highest paid safety in the league. I want to know he was right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I certainly can't remember that far back. Right. I'll have to research all that.
Maybe my guess is if there was anybody, it would have been Troy.
Yeah.
The nature of the position, a little bit less money. It's not a quarterback, and Troy, of course, the best in the game at the time.
I mean, Lamar Woodley, I mean, I know he was close, but I don't think he was, you know, as far as edge rushers go. I know James Harrison had a lucrative deal. I don't know, maybe Casey Hampton at the time was, because that was the same year that Ward signed his deal. Maybe Casey Hampton was the highest paid nose tackle in the league. But if anybody has a better memory than me and wants to shoot me that in an email, they can do so, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Not that the Steelers are quote-unquote cheap, but it's just very rare for them to be in a situation where they're paying the highest paid for a position.
Well, they just get ahead of the curve, like AB's contract. You know, they're paying a guy that they expect to be good before he reaches his full potential and ergo his full market value. So they're just pragmatic about it.
Right, and on the flip side, they're not going to run away from a situation like they had with Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, for starters, Ben knew his value. Everybody knew Ben's value. He got a fair market value deal and probably slightly more because mm-hmm. the market, I mean, they had no choice but to kind of pay him. And people talk all the time about these athletes, especially Steelers players, that, oh, well, maybe he'll take a hometown discount and stuff like that. When you're talking guys that are the best in the league at what they do and positions that they play, they'd be foolish to do that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, when you talk about AB, people saying, "Oh, well, maybe Antonio Brown only, you know, gives the Steelers a hometown discount of maybe $12 million a season." Ain't happening, folks. Mm-hmm. I mean, he'd be stupid. I mean, if they don't pay him, somebody else will.
Right.
You know.
Right.
When it gets to that, assuming the franchise tag's not used and all that, yada yada. And really, the same goes for kind of circling us back to Le'Veon Bell. You know, they have the franchise tag at their discretion. They won't use that. But if nobody does use, I mean, if they don't use that on Le'Veon Bell, you know, after this season, somebody probably going to pay him $15 million a season. So, maybe Le'Veon Bell will end up having the last laugh in this when it comes to the $15 million statement or the innuendo into that in his latest song. All right, we spent a whole lot of money talking. I mean, a whole lot of time talking about money and really nothing so far. So, what else you got for us?
Well, let's go to our next positional group. Probably to really round things out here. We'll finish up the secondary. We have the cornerbacks today.
And you can't start talking about the cornerback position with the Steelers without talking about a guy like William Gay, who, boy, the career he's had in Pittsburgh, a whipping boy for the longest time, leaves, goes to Arizona, comes back 1 year later, and all of a sudden, really a fan favorite of sorts when it comes to the cornerback position. A guy arguably the Steelers' best cornerback over the course of the last two to three seasons. A guy that, we talk about it all the time, very underrated as far as an X's and O's guy goes. A guy that obviously spends a lot of time in the film room. While he can play outside, he's probably best suited to play in the slot. However common, there's certain matchups you don't want to see him go up against. I mean, I still would cringe to see him go up against a guy like Rob Gronkowski, along those likes. But a guy that we think probably has a good shot at starting the 2016 season as the Steelers' starter outside and then sliding inside to the slot, right?
Yeah, that's kind of been my feeling, you know, leaning towards that Gay's going to play slot when the team goes sub-package, which, again, the caveat or the disclaimer, the Steelers play it 70-75% of the time. Just because it's not just that, you know, Gay might not be the fastest in the world. It's not that he can't play outside. I think he can do outside fine. He did it last year. We all saw that. It's some of the things he gives you inside that most other guys can't. His run defense is excellent. Connor Lake's talked about how the slot corner kind of functions like a strong safety. Gay's physical. He sacrifices his body. He's a sound tackler. He's been, you know, doing it for a long time. His communication in the slot is really important, being able to get any checks and stuff with the linebackers, with his corners, communicate signals. There's kind of a hub there. The Steelers have used that. It's kind of a hub of communication. So what Gay gives you that compared to, say, Svenquez Golson is much different, much better in terms of what William Gay can bring. So yeah, I'm kind of really leaning towards Gay going to be the slot guy for Pittsburgh this year, which I have no problem with.
If Gay has weaknesses, it's him guessing maybe one too many times, you're thinking he sees something and trying to guess and jump a route. Other than that, the double move, right?
Well, that's one and the same to me. That was what I think AJ Green, last year had a double move that got Gay got beat deep on it. It's rare, though. I mean, it's going to happen when you play enough snaps like William Gay. But, yeah, if you have to say one, you know, his film study's remarkable, but there are times where teams run their tendency breakers or, you know, Gay just misses something and you can't get beat. I guess, you know, he's no 4-4 guy. He never was and, of course, still isn't. But I still think the speed he has is more than enough. I point, you know, to him running step for step with Travis Benjamin last year against Cleveland down the left sideline. So, you know, I don't have a whole lot of flaws in Gay's game. In my one step to take, I just wanted him to continue to be a leader because, you know, Gay's working with a really young secondary this year, especially a cornerback, Artie Burns and Golson and Duran Grant. Even Ross Cockrell is just going into his second year in Pittsburgh, third year in the league. So Gay really has to not babysit, but, you know, he's got to be a really strong kind of rock for these young guys.
When you talk about William Gay as well, too, probably one of the most underrated cornerbacks in the league as far as coming up and playing the run and playing the screen. He could come up and hammer. You know, he is not afraid to hit. And how many times have we seen him create negative plays off of reading and reacting and coming up? Both against the run and the pass.
Yeah, I mean, the screen is basically an extension of the run. The traits of being able to play the run and play screen games are one and the same. Their recognition, their physicality, their reliability as a tackler. So, and Gay checks all those boxes. So, yeah, I think he's an underrated guy. I don't think that's me being a homer and saying that he's not a top 10 guy by any means, don't get me wrong, league-wide, but he's always been an underrated guy in Pittsburgh, I think, finally getting recognition now, still underrated league-wide, and although it isn't really as important for, of course, on the field, but he's a great character guy, great community guy, he won, I think, the award in Pittsburgh last year for the top community guy, I forget the name of it, he's done so much for, you know, domestic violence awareness and you know, charities and things like that. So he's a guy that, you know, everybody, you have to have on your football team because he makes your team better as a team, but as people, he makes you better.
Makes you wonder why he hasn't won the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award yet. I mean, I know there's some great competition year in, year out, but, man, the stuff, I tell you, if I was treated by the fan base the way he's been treated over the years, I'm not sure I would be. Now, look, he's not a social butterfly on social media, but, I mean, you can't blame him there. Some people actually have lives, you know, outside of social media, but he's always there with an interview. You know, you see after games as well, too, you're constantly up on Steelers.com. Really hard not to root for a guy like William Gay. Moving on in the secondary, you know, who's going to start in this base opposite William Gay at the start of the season? If you had to ask me, my guess would be Ross Cockrell. I think he deserves it. How long he's able to hold that position, we'll see. But in the base, I think he could be that guy, but you might think different, right?
No, I think it'll be Cockrell because I don't really know who else you're gonna peg in there right now. You know, Cockrell's got like I've said a million times before, and I won't harp on it, you know, that long again. It's just having a year in the system, having this offseason to learn, kind of really breathe and evaluate your performance, to have film to go off of. I mean, again, he got thrown into the fire within 2 weeks of getting signed. He's out there playing significant snaps, and I think Cockrell, you know, held his own last year. So no, I think he'll be the base corner. He'll be at left corner. William Gay will be at right corner in their base 3-4. And Cockrell will probably stay at left corner all year in sub package. He'll continue to play his left corner spot. So yeah, I think that's the pretty obvious option, and I don't think there's really much of an argument to be made currently for anybody else.
A guy that we've talked about in the past, a guy you like to see a little bit more physical, a guy that does have X's and O's in the brain, you know, understands what he's looking at. Boy, how that season last year could have gone so different for him, even though he was, you know, signed right before the start of the season, obviously for a depth position. If Cortez Allen stays healthy, there's a chance that a guy like Ross Cockrell barely sees the field throughout the season, right?
I guess that's a good point. Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think, man. If Golson never gets hurt, I know they wouldn't have traded for Boykin, but man, if the cornerback group would have stayed healthy, I wonder if they would have ever picked up Cockrell to begin with. You know,
I think they
probably do, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think they do for the sheer fact they seem to really like him before that draft. Now they like a lot of players, obviously, but I think from a depth position and a depth position only, I think they would have been willing to sign Ross Cockrell regardless.
You know what the crazy thing was, and this is a slight aside, but the Steelers hated their 90-man roster last year. You know how much turnover they had? They totally got rid of the guys in the practice squad. They brought in new guys from around the league. They didn't keep B.W. Webb. They didn't keep Kevin Fall, guys like that. I mean, they really revamped that bottom of the roster.
They sure did.
That's rare.
And we hear Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert talk about, you know, if we feel we can improve, you know, even the bottom end of our roster, we're going to do it. Ross Cockrell was part of that move. Obviously, they traded for Brandon Boykin on top of. But I'm interested to see Ross Cockrell progress, you know, if he's able to progress this year. The thing is, like I said, you'd like to see him be a little bit more physical here.
Yeah. He's got to get a lot more physical to me, Dave. He's got to learn to play as a base corner. He was a sub-package guy. He was away from the action a lot last year. He needs to be more physical or he's going to be in some trouble.
A guy that we think is physical but just hasn't had a chance to really show it or hasn't had any chance to show it since being drafted, Cinquez Golson. Boy, for such a compact player, if you go back and remember his time at Ole Miss, a guy that not only was a physical guy in coverage but was not afraid to come up and play the run, had some technique issues, I thought, in both areas of those games. But, the shoulder injury prevented Cinquez Golson from playing during his rookie season. Already during the offseason, he's had that soft tissue injury. You just kind of, I'm sure the team kind of wonders as well, what do we don't really know what we have in Cinquez Golson right now. And boy, if you want to talk about one guy that has to stay healthy for the entire time while the team is at Latrobe, it's Cinquez Golson, because they expect this guy to come off the bench, I'm sure, and play one of the two outside spots while William Gay shifts into the inside in the nickel. And if that's not the case, I mean, we very well could see Golson play in the nickel as well too. But as we already talked about, we expect Gay to do that. But regardless, Golson is one of these guys that you and I both look forward to seeing quite a bit here in the next several weeks.
Absolutely. Maybe him more than anybody else, because, again, we want to see where he's lining up, because as much as we speculate about it and as much as we've kind of gone back and forth on, he could play here, he could play there, I want to see it in camp. And that's going to be a really big thing that you can see from day one, even when this team isn't in pads. You can just see where guys are lining up. That's the thing I really look at the most the first 2 days when they really can't hit or do much. You hit the nail on the head, Dave. He's got to be able to get out there for all 14 practices, all 4 preseason games. He's got to soak up as many reps as possible. He has to show the team what he can do so the team can make an accurate evaluation of him. And he needs his reps because he's so far behind the 8-ball. So it was good that he looked like he got back out there for minicamp to at least participate to some degree off that soft tissue injury, whatever that was. Dave, he needs to be an Iron Man this preseason.
And another guy going to be right on his heels, possibly, as well as the heels of Ross Cockrell, first-round draft pick, Artie Burns. Look, we've talked ad nauseum about Artie Burns since he was drafted. A better suitor right now, bump and run, than he is anything else. Even though he's got the size, he sure seemed to get pushed around way too easy on that Miami tape, Alex. I mean, especially against wide receivers trying to block him in short areas, you'd like to see him kind of work off that. It's not, I don't think it was a lack of want to. It was just a lack of he couldn't at times. Just really outmatched at times for some reason. Obviously going to have to improve his strength and conditioning, as with every player that we could talk about, coming out of college here. I think the lack, I've written it and it's been talked about quite a bit about the time that Artie Burns missed practice time at Miami during the off season because of him running track, I think kind of hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
A guy that's going to have to just be built from the ground up, and because of that, I don't think we're going to see a lot of Artie Burns at the start of the season outside of the obvious special teams, gunner, kickoff, kind of stuff. But a guy that really, you would think the Steelers are wanting to get him on the field sooner rather than later.
Well, that's been the MO for their rookies. You look at Jarvis, you look at Chazier. Those are guys that were playing right away. Bud Dupree as well. I don't know where exactly the fit's going to be right away. And as the Steelers have said, this is a raw guy that is not totally fitting with the scheme yet. Like you said, Dave, he's got to get stronger. I think his hand use has to be better. You can have the length and all that, but if you don't have the proper hand use and being able to sync it with your lower body, it doesn't really matter if you have 33.5-inch arms. There's going to be some growing pains. He's got to be mentally tough. That's the way the position is naturally, but especially for a young guy that's supposed to be playing his senior year of football this year at Miami. I will see if he goes anywhere. I think it would be beating out Ross Cockrell at some point at that left corner spot, or if Cinquez Golson, I guess, really falls on his face, Burns would naturally be the next guy up. So, you know, very interested like the rest of Eagles Nation.
Let's see. We could talk about Duran Grant, but there's so much that we don't know about Duran Grant. You know, when he was drafted, I kind of called him like a poor man's William Gay. The thing about Grant, though, is he really didn't make the impact on special teams when given the opportunity that I thought he might. And that's something that, I mean, boy, if he's going to win a roster spot this year, it's going to be, I think because of his special teams ability. A physical guy, obviously, we don't think this, all that talk that we heard since he was drafted, Carnell Lake, Mike Tomlin, Keith Butler, you know, kind of leaving open the possibility of some safety move there. I don't think that's going to happen now. Now, at the flip side, could he be an emergency guy that goes in there and gives you the oh God help us snaps as a deep safety? Probably, but it's not even worth talking about those kind of scenarios in my opinion. But a guy that it sure got crowded ahead of him on the depth chart, didn't it?
Yeah, especially up at Golson, you know, that the same year in Artie Burns this year, and you had Cockrell in there. It's going to be special teams for Grant, and you know his chances were limited last year, so I don't knock him too much for not making a ton of plays. But yeah, preseason snaps, you know, cornerbacks, the young guys can be playing a lot. Golson, Grant, they're going to see a ton of time this preseason, so they got to make it count.
This is a guy that was regarded as a smart X's and O's guy coming out of Ohio State, too, right?
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, once you guys get into the NFL, I really don't pay a lot of attention to your college scouting report anymore. It's a clean slate. Let's see what you do in the NFL. He made a couple plays in training camp last year. Remember the one practice I think he had? Two interceptions in a day, or back-to-back days with an interception, undercutting a couple routes. So you've kind of seen the instincts and being able to read the route and read the quarterback's shoulders and make a quick break on the football. So, you know, those are the things you want to see in camp this year. It's the things you want to see in the preseason when you go against some of these rookie quarterbacks and rookies receivers and guys that make mistakes. You want to see Grant capitalize. You know, you make those splash plays, you'll get noticed.
Is it kind of gunner or bust for him?
He's got to cut his teeth on special teams, and you think about where he's going to get a chance to play. It's going to be on the kick coverage team, trying to replace some of the guys that were gone last year or guys that get moved off that unit. Let's just say, for example, like Ross Ventrone doesn't make this roster, then, you know, Grant's going to have to pick up some of those snaps, and Ventrone played some gunnery and he played some kick coverage. You got to make a mark on there. As we always say, you have to impress Danny Smith.
The other defensive backs on this roster, guys that'll be probably afterthoughts here pretty quick. Alhaj Shabazz out of Westchester, PA, nice size, 6'2", 200 pounds. Donald Washington, I know a lot's kind of been written and talked about him. He's actually, I think, played a few, had a couple cups of coffee elsewhere, an Ohio State product as well, too. Another big kid, kind of 6'1", listed at 197. Montel Garner, anything whatsoever to look forward to with these young players?
I think there's some interest there, and again, that's probably me being a little homerish this time, but Washington, like you said, he was drafted by Kansas City, I believe, in the fourth round. He played, I think, at least 3 years with that, maybe a bit into his fourth, and I think he had some off-the-field issues or something. He got shuttled up to the CFL and has played there the last couple of years, but this is a guy that was a super athlete coming out of Ohio State. Like I said, I think last podcast, he jumped, I want to say, a 45-inch vertical, which is one of the top marks ever at the Combine. So, you know, we'll see how much athleticism he still has at 29. But he got a rookie contract coming out of rookie minicamp. So that means you did something right. You caught the attention of the team. So it's a nice veteran, you know, got presence to have there, which I like. Yeah, Shabazz, I saw him at Villanova's Pro Day when he was coming out. He's a long kid. Don't know much else about him, but, you know, he'll be interesting. And then Garner, again, it was just spring ball, so take with a grain of salt, but he was apparently making a couple of plays out there, had several interceptions, according to Bob Labriola. So, maybe he's got some ball skills that we don't know about yet.
As far as this pedigree of this group goes, This should be a fun preseason to watch with this group, right?
Yeah.
And training camp. I mean, I've already kind of pointed to the fence a couple times, and look, it's, preseason games are meaningless, but, I mean, you really get to see a lot of players play. But in that, I don't foresee us seeing a lot of Montel Garner or Alhaj Shabazz, you know, maybe that the last series of or two of in fourth quarter of games. We ought to see a lot of these other guys not named William Gay. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited for that.
I'm excited, but I'm a little nervous too, because there's a lot of pressure on these guys. We have to see some things from Senquez Golson and Artie Burns, you know, because like I said, the depth in the secondary, safety and corner, is not. So it's not that they're not good; it's that it's an unknown right now, because they're just young guys that have not played a lot of football. So it makes me feel a little nervous when thinking about these guys, because if they don't show well in the preseason, I'm going to go into the start of the regular season feeling pretty nervous and doing a dance to the football gods that William Gay and Ross Cockrell and others stay healthy.
And, well, the thing we talked about too, look, it's all right to be nervous about this position, obviously, but when you consider what has gone out the door, and I know, you know, you were a big Antoine Blake fan. I know a lot of people listening were big Brandon Boykin fans as well too. But the fact of the matter is, you know, it wasn't good enough. They turned that over. It's hard to imagine. I mean, it's possible that this secondary could be worse, you know, in certain areas than last year's secondary was. But as we talked about several times in the past, if they get the pass rush that we think that they need to get this year, this secondary is going to be remarkably better anyways. And whether that's you know, so incremental that it's hard to measure is fine, because all the secondary needs to be, or this defense as a whole, is just a tad better than they were last year and it would make a big difference, right?
Yeah, no, it's a good way to put it. I'm sure that's not what Mike Tomlin is telling them, but for our purposes, yeah, you know, just be a little bit better is fine by me. I don't think it was terrible last year. This team forced a lot of turnovers. They were middle of the pack in pass, you know, yards per attempt. They got thrown on a ton because, one, the run defense was a lot better. Two, the Steelers were up in games a lot. So you look at the San Francisco game, the Colts blowout win. Teams are throwing the football late, so that's kind of going to naturally inflate stats. You know, it's not that the teams were ever really up big on Pittsburgh and were trying to grind the clock out with their four-minute offense. So, you know, people say the Steelers were 30th in pass defense last year. Well, that's pass yards total, you know, pass yards and yards per game, but that number is skewed. It's not a relative number, because, you know, the Steelers got thrown on a ton, and it's not necessarily their fault. So I think hopefully the group will be better. I just want to see them be better tacklers, you know, don't have the miscommunication issues, don't give up the big play, just kind of common themes that we had with Dick LeBeau and the same under Keith Butler.
I tell you, I always like to go back to that adjusted net yards per passing attempt differential stat that I like to keep, Alex. I really, really think there's a lot can be garnered from that stat. Now, I think memory serves me, they ended the 2015 season with a defensive NEA stat of 6.19. If that can get just under 6, you know, that's like the magic. 6.0 is the kind of the unofficial magic number, but I mean, ideally, I think if they can get that number to like 5.75 or 5.8, I think that's going to make a world of difference. I don't believe teams can win championships with a 6.0 NEA number or higher. I just don't.
That's what you said last year. I think partway through the season, you said that number has to come down.
Right. And it, you know, I had to go back and see how much it actually came down. If it did, it didn't come down much. You can win the regular season. You can make it to the playoffs with just a good offense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We've seen that time in, time out. Teams can do that. The difference, however, when you get to the playoffs, I think because offenses around the league at that point are so good, you know, 80% of them, teams that make the playoffs have strong offenses that can win championships. The defense is the difference at that point.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I really, really think that – and I'll point to defense right now. I mean, if the Steelers don't end the regular season with a defensive NEA number of less than 6.0, they're not going to win. They're not going to win, you know, Lombardi. To me, it's just that simple when you go back and look at this stat, look at the history of it. So, you know, when I say just maybe incrementally better, you know, a few more third down stops, one or two more interceptions, one less, you know, three less touchdowns, you know, allowed by the defense during the season, you know, a few more sacks. It's really that simple. I think when you kind of look at this kind of stuff, long term, when it relates to that stat, we've talked quite a bit about these cornerbacks and nickel and everything, you know, that goes along with that. The thing about it, though, is we could see a lot more dime than we do nickel this year, right?
No, I don't think. Are you saying more dime than nickel?
More dime. Period. I guess. Yeah. I mean, we're still going to see nickel in certain situations, but how? Here's something we need to research as well, too. You know, we've got the defensive charting stats on this from last year. How much? I mean, we saw an increase of dime during the two playoff games, right? How much nickel did we see during that time? Do you remember?
It was probably about the same. I don't have the exact numbers on me now. They just went dime whenever it was third and long. I mean, that's just kind of the when they decided to do that. So the numbers were it probably just was less base than anything. I don't think dime siphoned away from nickel that much necessarily.
Well, we need to go back and research that. I've been meaning to kind of write something slanted towards, you know, Timmons and him being pulled off the field and all like that. But, I mean, we did see a heavy increase in dime. I mean, I think it was more than 10 plays in both those games, right?
Yeah, but, again, they started doing that in the regular season, too. That wasn't brand new for the playoffs. It might have been
a little bit more,
just because of circumstance, but not. I don't think it was intentional.
Right, but we saw a slow trend towards it being more heavy in the playoffs.
I'd have to go look at the numbers to really say for sure. They did it at the end of the season, like week 14 or week 15 and on. They kind of started incorporating their dimes. So I don't know if there was really anything new trend wise in the playoffs than there was at the end of the regular season.
No, we saw it slowly kick up towards the end of the season, but I'm just saying it was really prominent during the playoffs. I thought when last time I looked at that breakdown.
Well, if it was probably just circumstantial because they run it, and if it's third and eight plus, they're going to be in dime, and they maybe just had more third and eight plus kind of situations in the playoffs.
Right, and you're dictated sometimes. Now, obviously, first and 10, you're going to see a lot of your base 3-4 except certain portions of the game when hurry up and you know, stuff like that, or teams behind heavily on the scoreboard. So, you know, it's obvious that you're going to see base on first and 10 situations there. Second and 10 or second down, though, is really, you know, it's all going to be dependent on what your opposition runs out there. And today's NFL, you see a lot of 11 personnel be rolled out regardless of down and distance, you know, unless you're dealing with a second and one. But even then, I mean, it's tempting to roll out some 11 personnel in second and one situations, especially if you got a good blocking wide receiver as one of those and a good tight end that you can either collapse or spread out, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's the Steelers, every defense, and the Steelers no exception, their personnel groupings are all based off of what the offense does. So if the offense comes out in 11, the Steelers are going to be in nickel, usually, or unless it's third and long, then they might be in dime. If the team comes out in two tight, you know, two tight ends, Steelers are going to most likely be in their base defense. So that's how they adjust every time. It's and because teams run 11 so much, you know, they do it on first down, they do it in any down distance, Steelers are naturally going to be in sub package a lot more.
If I was to put you on the spot right now and say, break me down the percent of base, percent of nickel, and the percent of dime, and dime as we know it, talking three safeties on the field, give me a percentage breakdown on the 2016 season.
Oh, man, you got to give me 1 second to at least pull out my charting from last year just to give me some numbers to go off of. Trying to think of all the numbers.
So, in the meantime, I'll fill time saying it's funny to see Antonio Brown cautioning people about July 4th. Make sure people come back to work on Tuesday with the same amount of digits that that they entered the weekend with. That's obviously a reference to Jason Pierre-Paul, and the incident that he had last offseason. I think a lot of players have learned from this over the years. Look, I mean, I think Stefan Tuitt kind of even pointed to that earlier in the week here. You got the money to pay for the fireworks. I understand that. Let your buddies be the one to fire those things off.
Yeah, I have the numbers up. Last year was about 66% of the time nickel, about 27% in their base 3-4, about 5.5% in dime, and about 1% in goal line. I think those numbers are generally going to be the same this year. I think there's eventually going to be a cap on, you know, teams running 11 personnel. It's not going to, you know, exponentially get higher every single year. So I'll say nickel comes down maybe a tiny bit to like 63%, base stays about the same, 27%, dime kicks up a little bit to like, I don't know, 7 or 8%, and, you know, goal line stays about the same. So I really think it's going to be similar to last year, about two-thirds nickel, about a quarter in your base 3-4, and a little sprinkling of dime in there.
So you still think a guy like Lawrence Timmons then is going to play 95% of the snaps?
Yeah, just about. Just because, I mean, he's still a great player, and you still have to make sure you have your run defense out there. And it is a little tough to justify taking Lawrence Timmons off the field on a regular basis, a veteran, a trusted guy for a rookie in Sean Davis.
The good thing is now you have, or you think you have, personnel that you can throw out either nickel or dime against an 11 personnel. Mm-hmm.
And it can all be subject, you know, game plan week to week. You know, you might, against New England, you might run dime a lot more because you need Sean Davis out there to cover, you know, Gronkowski and Bennett. And against teams that don't have the big threats of tight end, you might play a little bit more traditionally. So it's really just going to depend on a week-to-week basis what you're facing.
I want to ask you one more question, and this was in my Friday five questions that I posted. I don't think you ever posted a response to this.
No, not this week.
Who has, in 2016, will Le'Veon Bell have more or less receptions than the Steelers' total cumulative sacks combined?
Okay, so you're saying, like, the Steelers...
Will Le'Veon Bell's receptions during the regular season be more or less than the team's total sacks?
It'll be more. I mean, Bell had 83 2 years ago, and the Steelers aren't getting 83 sacks. So as long as Bell, of course, stays healthy, he's going to hit at least like 70 receptions this year, and these aren't the 85 Bears, the Steelers, so it's Bell easily.
Are you expecting Bell to play heavily in these first four games of the regular season?
Yeah,
are you
if he's expecting? Healthy, if he's as long as there's no setback, yeah, I mean, that's the plan, right? Was there any compelling reason not to?
I would think that you know, the Kevin Colbert likes to talk about, you know, one full year removed from the injury, you know, you really don't know what you have, blah, blah,
if
blah.
If he's on the active roster, he's healthy, he's full go to me.
I think he's still kind of... especially if you're not going to use him a lot during... Look, I mean, quite honestly, he could spend all of training camp on the pup, right?
It's not impossible, yeah.
I mean, and we could seriously be looking after... We could seriously be talking about him only getting like 5 snaps at most during the preseason, and maybe even none. I mean, would that surprise you?
It wouldn't shock me, no, but, you know, that's okay. AP hasn't played in the preseason in forever, and he's doing okay.
Right, right. I just think it would be, I guess, prudent to not expect him to come out there and touch the ball 25 times
right.
a game.
But even then, and I do think D'Angelo gets some more playing time this year because we've seen what he can do, but that's not – Bell's still going to catch. Even if they limit him a little bit, he's still going to catch – 60-65 passes this year, right?
I would hope.
So, and obviously Pittsburgh's not touching 60 sacks. Sorry, guys, if you think they are. It's not going to happen.
If they do, we would go ahead and give us a Lombardi right now. Yeah. So. You know, because I mean, if this team can get after the quarterback like that and this offense stay healthy, then look out. All right, I think we killed enough time. Heck, a lot of people probably won't even listen to this until the middle of the week because of the 4th of July.
Well, just real quick, yeah, at risk of people not listening, I want to thank everyone who's donated so far for training camp. It's you can find the link Maybe it'll be included in this podcast. Please read the description for the whole spiel about it. But thank you a million to everybody that's donated so far.
Yeah, and look, this money goes towards Alex's cause. I mean, driving, gas, wear and tear, food. I mean, all this. I mean, I think he laid it out there. If you feel that there's not money good, well spent, you'd rather give it to a homeless guy on the side of the road, by all means, don't give us that money. If you'd rather donate to the Humane Society, by all means, don't go broke doing this. However, comma. You've read and seen Alex's training camp work in the past. You know this is a great cause. On top of it, we would appreciate your support if you deem it worthy as well. Folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steeders Depot. You can follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kazor. You can follow David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We hope to be back with you on Friday doing this once again. Have a safe 4th of July holiday weekend here, finishing it up. Please don't drink and drive. Please don't blow your fingers off. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.